You know how I reacted to that rather than said, he's crazy, he's some kind of religious nut. I can't imagine a good preacher calling himself Oral anyhow. Especially like Oral Roberts. Oral Roberts. He could have named himself. His mama done it to him 80 years ago, called him Oral. That must have been something of the future. I reacted this way, in this manner, and I liked my reaction. Oral can raise him from the dead. Every time I see a person with no hair like Frank, I say, heal. I say, if Oral can raise him from the dead, I can put hair on your head. That's what I thought. Every time I adjust a patient, you know what I expect? Some people expect to break their neck. That's the first thing you expect. If you're a negative chiropractor, you say, what if he's going to live through that one? If you're a negative, you know what I expect? A miracle. Do you expect that or some mechanical pain to disappear? I expect him to heal. I've always expected him to heal. After I make the adjustment, I want to come back and say, rise up. I reach my hand out. They say, I can't get up. I said, you can. I've got a back problem. I said, you had a back problem. I've been in bed 3 weeks. I said, try and see if you can raise up. Give me your hand. And about 80% of the time, what happens? They rise up, students. They rise up and meet your hand, and they have this tremendously effective, emotional look on their face. And it kind of does you a lot of good, you know, when they look at you like you just healed them, you know. B.J. used to wear a beard, you know, a Van Dyke mustache. And he used to say, in a story, I never have learned how to walk in these things. And people would walk by him on the street, and they'd stop and look at him and say, my God. And old B.J. would say, it ain't so much what they said, but how they said it. That's a fine story. Listen to that. It wasn't so much what they said, but how they said it. B.J. wanted to be exalted. He tried to look like Jesus, you know. And when they said, my God, he didn't mean that they said it with exasperation, with shock. He meant with, they recognized him at last. You follow? And you can't imagine. Now, this is true. If you're always in doubt and in expectancy that nothing ever happens, you're in the crick and backache and strain business. I'd rather have a guy with a terminal cancer than a crick in his neck. A guy comes in and says, I got a crick in my neck, Doc. I say, go down to see Smell. So he's good at that. He can't hardly turn. He said, will you adjust me? I said, nope. I'll send him to Smats up in New York. He's the best on cricks I know of. Or Van Note in North Carolina. We'll send him down. He can take care of that. Guy comes in and says, Doc, I got terminal cancer. I said, what else do you have? Got a headache. Got a bowel difficulty. Got a breathing difficulty. I can't sleep. I'm worried to death. I'm confused. What can you do for me? I believe we can help you tremendously. You think you can heal my cancer? I can't say that. I can't say it legally. I can correct the subluxation, and that will be the greatest, give you the greatest possibility of a complete recovery. I can say this, if I can correct that subluxation, your headaches in all probability will be relieved. This bowel discomfort in all probability will be relieved. You'll be more refreshed. The arm and leg pains will be relieved to some degree. And then you adjust the patient. And you read him with a neurocalligraph or the instrumentation that you've got, and you take a post set of x-rays and it's 0-0. Anybody know what that means? You've reduced the subluxation where there is none coming out of the foramen magnum, where the medulla oblongata is. Don't use that word to a patient. Don't talk about the medulla oblongata. Talk about the foramen magnum where the brain stalk or the stem goes out, something understandable. You've made this clearance. And the patient's post-x-ray shows you 0-0. And their instrument shows it doesn't have any more impingement. The motion palpation indicates that the patient is free. Let me ask you, do you know this significance? I didn't say a while ago in my dialogue that you should say, because it took me 25 years to understand it. I offered a suggestion that you said I can and I will and I must succeed. Remember I said that earlier in my dialogue? I did not say the biggest remark you can make with authority. It is I am. You might write that down. That's the strongest thing, but the most difficult to come to the realization. If you can get that patient in whatever manner that you can get him to say, after you clear the subluxation, if he can say with authority, I am going to be well, or I am better, that's the key. If I can get you at this meeting to see the possibility of your personal success in chiropractic, and I can give you some action plans that are organized using the knowledge that you've got. I'm not interested in changing your technique, your office procedure right at this time, your motivational capabilities. I want you to use just exactly what you've got, even you guys in school back here. The minute you can say with authority that I am able to reproduce my knowledge in my brain on this piece of paper and I can select the right answers, if you can do that, you know what your efficiency will be? Pick up about 50%. You know that old frustrated feeling when you go in and study all night and you get up next morning, you got it at night, and you get up and you can't think of a thing? It just won't come out. You look at the paper, don't mean a damn thing. You know you've looked it all up, but it won't come out. If you could just shuffle around a little bit to where it would start bawling out, this is right, this is C, D, E, A, B, just like you had the word. Y'all don't know what the word is? The word's an old exam. And the guy gives you the same one. That's the word. And I'm saying that all exams, if you can say, I am being able to bring it out, it's all as if you've got the word. Not that you, Charlie does, sold you the exam for $2,500 or something like that. If you've got it inside of yourself and can say, I am doing it, and you can see all this success. I found out a long time ago, the guys that had all the questions about, well, I don't know whether this works, that works, this works, I'm still not sure. I couldn't count on him being a success. Ones we could count on and say, man, I'm fired up. I got it now. I can see it. I can see it. What am I saying to you DCs that morning, you CAs? You got to be able to see it. And I want you to, before we leave, you can say, I can see it. I can grow. I can see where my business can grow. I can see where we've been making mistakes. I can see where we're not activating our patients properly. We're not educating them properly. We're not asking for referrals. We're not handing out a newsletter. We're not making a phone call. We're not on an advertisement campaign. We don't have a muscle screening test going on. We don't have open houses. There's a lot we can do. And a lot of you know that right now, but you don't have enough space inside that it won't work, so you don't have time to do it. Did I name off anything that you weren't doing right now? I mean, it's a part of a regular day routine. Aren't you in business? Don't you want to be paid? I was really weak and disappointed a while ago when you didn't say, I want to do $1 million. How many wants to do $1 million? Give me your hands. $1 million a year. Come on, you students. Do you want to or not? Don't be bashful. You don't want to do nothing? Huh? Million and a half. You're out of stewardship. You want to, don't you? If you can make a strong enough commitment, if you can make that commitment by opening up this inner space in your mind's eye and learning how to talk with authority. How many of you do self-talk all the time, talking to yourself? Don't be bashful. Saul, you don't talk to yourself ever? Raise your hands high where you can look around the room. Who does self-talk? Talking to themselves. Now, let me put this out. Here's why DE has sustained itself and always had the big practitioners. I mean the big ones. Because when these people come to DE and get a transition, Frank, with an opportunity to open their space inside their minds with the ability to say, I am going to increase my practice. That's the key. You got to get to that point and have it be free in there, not just jammed in with all this other stuff. It's got to be free inside your mind. I am going to become more successful. I am going to work. And then you've got another concept in there. 10 times faster. How many of you have got that concept? Give me your hand. 10 times faster. All right, I'll give you an illustration where all of you get it. Suppose I said that if you would accomplish by Wednesday what you should accomplish in the next 7 days, if you'll have it all done by Wednesday, including the mail-outs, the patient's call, the office clean-up, the office paint, everything that you should be doing is behind and all that thing. Suppose that I told to you that if you did it by Wednesday at 6 o'clock, you would win $20,000 a month for the next 3 months. Could you find out how to do that much activity and get all of this stuff planned, all these programs out, and go through all these procedures that I'm going to do before the day out? Could you do that? Raise your hand and say if you could. Isn't that more realistic when I talk to you in those terms? I say work 10 times faster. 10 times faster don't make all that much sense. But when it talks about winning a prize, that's what I'm asking you. If you'll learn to accomplish these things, and when you go home, I want the only thing to be on your mind, I want you to be conscious and aware of everything that surrounds you, your family necessities, your business, your religious, your spiritual, your social needs. I want all of them to have the priority of your full self. But I want there to be some space in there that you can add to the program that I'm talking about. Space necessary for you to make these definitive actions. Because I want to say unhesitatingly right now that you probably, 95% of you, have got an adequate office procedure, have got adequate lecture procedures, you've got adequate collection procedures, either if you don't even have a computer. Do you have a computer? Wish you didn't have it sometime? Okay. Those of you don't have a computer, don't get one right now. Wait till you get to 500 visits a week. Wait till you get to 500 visits a week, and then you need a computer. Why should you need to spend $20,000 or $15,000 on something that's another pain? That's good if you got it. The main thing is, what's happening in that head of yours? How are we going to get the referrals? How many are capable? Or while you're in contact with a patient, how many are capable of giving your undivided attention to that patient to the extent that love flows freely through you to that patient? Or how many can openly say that they can't give an undivided attention because I'm thinking of golf or some negative in practice, or some family dispute, or I wrecked the Mercedes. I'm not saying this is you. You admit it. There's a lot didn't. You follow? Undivided attention is giving love that's to be expressed. How many really love your patients? I don't mean physically. I mean really spiritual love. Okay? Now, if you've got that, how many of you really understand and know about chiropractic? Can you talk to authority with the patient? I mean, really in authority and say, I have found. Those of you that are new for here for the first time, you need to write this down. I have found the fundamental, basic, underlying cause of all or nearly all of your problem. It is in your spine. It can be corrected right here in this clinic. You new guys, say that 1,000 times until you can say it with absolute and total authority. You don't have to say it forcefully. If you're able to say that, that patient will believe automatically. Use as scientific a terminology as you possibly can, but do not let the science substitute for the reality that you are a human being and that you are directing that person's life, and it has to be done skillfully and lovingly. Now, if you have love for the patient, they will open up their innates to you. They will open their innate consciousness to you. And then if you will conduct yourself properly, you will bombard into their consciousness what you wish to program them with. Is that understandable? If you reach them with love, the proper handshake, the proper eye contact, the proper verbalization, the proper manner in which you conduct yourself, your hands are right, the perfume is right, the hairdo is right, the office is right, the sign suggestions are right, the x-ray machine is right, where there's been no doubt, no break in this continuity. And by that I mean this. If the patient comes in the front office and they are anticipating meeting this doctor that they hope will help them, do you know what it means to be having something turn off? You follow what I'm saying? Do you have a front office that does not reject or turn people off? Does your chiropractic assistant conduct themselves in a manner at whatever level you are, where you are, that doesn't turn people off? Does the assistant use the proper language to answer the phone and to make the contact? Do you have the office? Is it clean? Is it decent? Are the signs, the suggestions, is the equipment, is the rooms of such a nature that it is, you are positive and that you have checked and rechecked and checked and rechecked, that you are right up on top to where that patient cannot be turned off? Or does the paper basket full? Can you look on the floor and there's dirt? Can the sun come in on the floor? You can see a skim of dust on it this far. The cobwebs all over the office. The office is in a state of disarray. The chairs are unfinished. The flowers look like they got spiders all over them, perhaps even a tarantula living in them. The suggestions on the wall, the pictures are crooked. Toys for the baby piled up, nothing's right, or where you turn people off and your appearance is not what it should be. I don't mean like Gorgeous George or nothing like that. It's like you are. Are you able to give your best foot forward? Can you talk with authority? Can you shake hands with love? Can you give them out of that feeling, that touch, the sensitivity, the warmth, the love, the friendship, that they will, it's believable when they come in, I met a person that I like. Do you know all the different types of personalities that you'll meet in your office? Do you know what your type personality is? I can't believe it. What is your type personality? What are all the type personalities that do come in? How do you deal with the different types of personalities? You can say the right words and the wrong word. I had a scientist one time from Lockheed Aircraft, and I was giving him a typical colloquial story. He said, "That's not very scientific, doctor." That knocked me back a few props. The next time a scientist came in, I rolled out a lot of material. Even that knocked him back. I forgot it since. I hadn't had that many scientists in. You understand? You got all these things worked out? Do you practice? You have a staff meeting every week? Doctors, do we talk over our problems? We got an incentive? All right, girls, I'm getting on your side. We have an incentive for so many new patients for the girls, the CAs, for the whatever they are, male or female, your office manager, do you have some kind of incentive? We go over, can we aspire to $100,000 a month, $75,000 a month? If we reach $50,000 a month, we're going to spread some of it around to our CAs, our office manager, we're going to have a little percentage of that. And the reason we can't, because we can't think we can do over $20,000 or over $15,000. Start thinking, is that a goal? We go to $30,000, we'll give you a part of the action. We're going to $40,000, we'll give you a part of the action. Go to $50,000, we'll give you more part of the action. We go to $50,000, $75,000, $100,000. We're going to have to hire 7-8 more people. But you people who've been with me a long time, based on your knowledge, your authority, your love, your camaraderie, your dedication, your overtime, you're going to make maybe $10,000 more a year, $15,000. If I'm doing $100,000 a month, whatever's right, you help me do it. You help me build this business. Now, I'll tell a story about Larry Bird. Some of you guys hadn't heard this, but it means something meaningful for all of us. when they consider Larry Bird in the future, according to the people that know, Larry Bird will be considered among the top five that ever was. Now, Bird makes about $3.5 million a year. I think that we professionals need to be making, all of us need to be making $500,000 by number served. And some of you who really perfect yourself, and if they talk about successful practitioners on down the road 20 or 25 years or 50 years, they'll remember you as being in the top dozen. You follow what I mean? Of capability. Now, one of the interesting things about Larry is that he's a white man, does not have the equipment. That is, he can't jump. He can't jump over 8 or 10 inches on the floor. He looks like he's standing still. If you ever, you ladies may not watch the basketball game, but you can have some great jumpers, and everybody will jump at the same time, and some of them will stop here, and then there'll be one or two that'll keep on going. They jumped at the same time, but they just jumped higher. Now, Bird can't do that. He's an 8-inch off the floor. An old crippled guy can jump that far, 8 inches. And he's not fast. He could run 112 seconds, I suppose. 10 flat is acceptable. But yet, he's considered the best that ever will be. Now, what does that mean to you? What are the skills that you, as a practitioner, as a human entrepreneur, and an entrepreneur means one who's going out and venturing out to make a profit, to build a business. What will best build your business? And they've often said, just get results, just results. Well, I don't agree with that exactly. You must produce the results. You must have a technique that you can work. I don't say that you need to specifically be involved in the upper cervical work only. I've learned over the years that there are other beneficial adjustments. You know what I mean? I'm not being facetious. I'm just saying it. Learn how to move the bones, all bones, not just the atlas axis area, and learn how to do it in many ways. I had Bob Hoffman over here adjust me the other day on my axis. Hadn't had a toggle on my axis in a long time. Many of you have had some diversified and whatever. I was 100% better. I didn't even think I was bad. I wasn't good, but I wasn't bad. Well, I got better. You must produce that kind of results. What are the other things that you've got to be good at? I just named one of the things that you've got to be good at, a mistake-free office. No mistakes in the office. No mistakes in the contact. No mistakes in the field, the procedure. No mistakes in your dedication and your authority. No mistakes in your contact. Concentrate to where you can give that patient your undivided attention. Concentrate until you learn how to love people. Make yourself love them. It's an exercise of the will. Have you perfected your handshake, a little thing like the handshake? Handshake, the communication of the ages. Develop the eye contact. Develop the suggestions. When you reach out to shake a person's hand, do they reach back? Learn how to make suggestions when you talk to patients. After every contact, you would say, are there any questions? What's next?
Are you okay?
Are you okay?
Bring your wife?
Bring your wife, bring your friends. Every contact is a suggestion. After you make the adjustment, what do? You don't walk in stiffly like this and say, how are you doing? What do you do? Watch my mannerisms, you guys back here. Happy to see you. You look better. Your skin is better, Dr. Smets. I like your beard. Okay? Point out all the good things after you've talked to these people. After you've made the adjustment and it's clear, what are you supposed to say to them? Well, let's wait and see what happens? No. You're supposed to say, you will be better. They'll say, no way. I've been sick too long. You say, You will be better. And if you are persistent and can say it with authority, you'll put that inside of their innate consciousness, and what will happen? They will start saying, I am better. I am better. The cause has been corrected. How do I know the cause has been corrected, you might say? How does the patient know? Because you said it. You say they look better. You say we have corrected the basic fundamental underlying problem. It's gone. Your adjustment is clear. If you will hold that adjustment, you will be better. Does it make any difference if they believe it or not? Slightly. Let me ask you this, the reason I pose that question. If I drop the keys, students, are they going up or are they going down? Up or down? Watch it. It's really a dramatic thing. Jesus Christ, this is great. I like it. Watch, students. And all of you are questioning whether or not chiropractic works. And on what diseases it works on. My God, I don't know what diseases it works on. How do I know what the subluxation is affecting on a particular patient comes in? I'll tell you one thing. Catch this, all of us. My diagnostic skills and my diagnostic acumen and my diagnostic responsibility precludes that I refer patients who need referral. You follow that? My professional training, my education gives me the ability to refer patients that need referring and to consultate with patients who need consultation. Wouldn't I be a puny chiropractor if I was out here saying, I can't take you, you. I can take you. You've got only a mechanical disturbance in the spine. That's where the diagnostic responsibility that stacks up in federal courts all over. They're ruling. Chiropractors don't diagnose diseases. Chiropractors have a responsibility to refer, to consultate, to consult with when it's in the best interest of the patient. Sol, I believe you and I have done that all these years, hadn't we? When somebody thought, we might not have called it diagnosis, when we thought that the patient needed other care, we weren't hesitant. Were you ever hesitant? It's just a matter of getting that understanding. But don't go out there in your mind's eye and say, this disease, no. Let me ask you this. I didn't get to finish this with my students the other day. That patient with the pain in McBurney's point, I don't even know whether y'all know what that indicates or not. He got a 10,000 white blood cell count. A urine count shows some infection in there. The person has a subluxation. The leg balance is off. The readings all indicate the person's subluxated. There's a rapid pulse. There's pain in McBurney's point. There's a fever of 105. 10,000 white blood cells count. Even a neophyte chiropractor will say, the patient has apparent appendicitis. Is it aroused by the vertebral subluxation in the primal sense or not? Does that have an impact on it, the neuronal disturbances? Does it have an impact on this patient? What's my responsibility on this patient and all other patients? What am I diagnosing for in the first place? To determine if that patient has a, listen to this little word, a chiropractic lesion. Dave, that means a subluxation. For these nuts that we're dealing with out here, we'll understand it. A chiropractic lesion. They say, oh, you mean you don't just line up people and take them? Certainly not. They must all have chiropractic lesions, which means biomechanical, neuromuscular, structural subluxations of the spine. Oh, I didn't know you people diagnosed. Absolutely. When do you refer? When diagnosis indicates that referral is necessary. Oh, I didn't know that. When do you consult with other healthcare providers? When diagnosis indicates that a consultation is necessary. Like what, for instance? A patient comes in with a bleeding femoral artery, gushing about a pint a minute. We don't at that time say, wait, until I go through a 3-day examination to determine whether or not you are subluxated. You might have to be speaking through the Pope to get to that man in 3 days if you did not stop the blood. Understand about the diagnosis back here? Is that complicated to understand? Does that any way destroy chiropractic's intent? Does it hurt our faith? Does it hurt our professional position? It enhances our ability. Y'all understand it? It enhances our ability to be in the professions. But it in no way says that we diagnose the diseases and name the diseases. We got the spine, conditions related to it, the observation of deviations from the normal. Let me ask you for a nice little concept for those of you that don't understand. If a little boy of 18 years old goes and takes the training for a medical technical assistant to work with the state or county here, and he's had training in various blood work, how to draw the blood, and some urine work, he, in this, our state and in most states, can be sent out by an authority, meaning a licensed doctor, to work on these emergency teams. That little man could find an unconscious victim. He could report that unconscious victim to the proper authorities. He could, under direction of that proper authority, meaning a licensed primary provider, a health provider, he could draw blood. He could tap the source of urine. He could use any other physical diagnostic procedure that he had. He could report back to the proper health authority, and that health authority could say, administer this drug, that drug, this drug, this drug, based on the deviation from the normal that that young person reports back to the proper authority. Do y'all understand that? A little 18-year-old boy who's had 6 months technical training can draw blood and do it just as well as a 12-year trainee. He can tap the arteries. He can pull the substance out. He can perform the test. And he can do an observation of the deviations from the normal. Is that understandable? The observations of the deviations from the normal does not preclude the naming of a specific disease. You understand? So chiropractors observe by the standards, deviations from the normal. That doesn't mean that we refer out every person like this patient that's got all these deviations from the normal. Suppose that we panic and we got all these good medical doctors that love us and we send all these patients to. Suppose that we refer this apparent appendicitis to a patient. His pain in McBurney's point and his right leg is drawn up. And that patient goes to the hospital and everybody is thrilled. This patient has an appendix that's about to burst. 3 hours after they've been in the hospital, it does rupture. And the surgery hasn't been performed. And the patient dies from peritonitis. Or pancreatitis. What do you think? What do we think as a chiropractor who left an unsubluxated person that it might, in all probability, had been directly involved in a primal sense with the subluxation? And how long does it take to be effective with the right adjustment? Watch. I make the adjustment, the person is demonstrating symptoms with cancer, peritonitis, pancreatitis, appendicitis. I make the adjustment, and it clears out all the neuronal disturbance. When can you expect results? After I make the adjustment. If you clear the adjustment out, the patient begins to improve when? Students, now. Not next year. Now you have to make the professional determination in this nature on every case that comes into your clinic. It is your responsibility to determine whether or not they need chiropractic care, consultation, or referral right now. It is your primary responsibility to accept that patient if they have a vertebral subluxation. Even though the deviations from the normal observation are there, that would indicate a referral. Make the adjustment. Make further observation. Was the patient clear? Is the subluxation free? 99 times out of 100, if you clear the patient will respond and become better within minutes, within seconds. It's just as simple. Watch the seconds. That means that the flow comes from inside the patient down to the patient via the nervous system. You got that? The concept. With that responsibility that we are armed with, that's the first thing we want to become good at. Now, some of you, I won't ask you this. Some chiropractors are never, never, never sure that they have made the adjustment. I know that. That's the reason you must learn how, in addition to what you know numerically, or with Gonstead, or with the activator, or with the Gonstead, whatever, or the pettibone, or life cervical, you must know and have technical skill to determine whether or not you've got the energy released and the healing is taking place. That's the big criteria. If you're working with this, you're working with the principle. Didn't we start out predicating that we are principled people? All right, now, after you've got this down and you understand this diagnostic approach, this professional approach, wouldn't it be marvelous if the medical doctors referred all of their patients to us who had subluxations? Is that a possibility? Is that a possibility? I don't know how soon it'll be. We're going to have to put them to their knees to make them do that. We've been all of this decency that we've been wondering about, talking about all this referral concept that we have, all this consultation that we have. We've got a little tad of medical doctors out here referring their patients to chiropractors. And then hesitantly, yeah, there's an old country song that says, old bridges burn slow. Them country boys can really make it sound right. Clark Rich sent me a letter congratulating me on my final push article. He showed me a membership that the DE men and the ICA men loyal to the cause had caused the ICA membership to go up to 4,500 during my administration. It's down to 2,100 now. We had 10,000 members, including students. Clark sent me the paper with it up here at that time and down here now. He recorded a country song. He talked about a lady who was a brilliant conversationist. And he said, it looked like to me that the story of ICA, what it should be and it was like the girl who let her walking do the talking, and what a brilliant conversationist she was. So he sent me this structure here, and y'all ought to remember that. That's a damn good point there. What a brilliant conversation she was, and she let her walking do her talking. Now, you ladies may not understand that, but every man does. He understands it well. Okay, the first principle is that we take charge of our life. And by taking charge, we are getting down to the bottom to where we have the ability to take charge. We don't react, we act. Now, a little bit of discussion on that acting. Act on what? What is the only controllable thing that you have to act on? The goals and objectives that I said for you a while ago. The long-range, definite, major purpose for you right now is to see, to develop yourself to the capacity to motivate, stimulate, and activate and serve 500 visits per week. Now, if you have accepted that as a goal and that you've got 120 visits next week, the following week, you must be able to demonstrate some growth. You must be able to demonstrate that you want to have more than 5 new patients in a week. Along that line, even though you are depending on the principal to send you these patients, and by depending on the principal, I mean this. This is another avenue. Control the imagination, and write that down. Control the program talk that you do to yourself. Control the emotions that you experience. Control the action that you do daily. Now, the problem is with the lack of space in our inner being. Thank you. The lack of space. Many of us are sitting in the office, negative about your friend that's doing better than you are, mad at your wife, mad at your mother-in-law, mad at the bill collectors, mad at me, mad at ACA, mad at ICA, just mad at the school, mad at everywhere, just thinking about it all day long. And you're in the office reading fishing books, golfing books, hunting books, sex books, every other kind of book, comic books. You follow? And your emotions are of such a nature that you have built them up by reacting to fear and frustration, and you're being driven by this constant chatter. Now, here's the way this thing works. When you learn to do this, this is easy. And we taught it, been teaching it for 20 years. You people have been here that long, know what it's about. He said, put the mic back on your tie. Is that right? Too loud? I like it loud. I noticed some of you jumping and jerking every now and then. Now, these things that I mentioned, that the imagination, the emotions, the action, and the desire are all together. You need to write those down. And that means you can't be in the office reading all these different books, dialogue, practicing your golf putt, or talking to your girlfriend or your insurance agent or your chiropractor or your medical friends, whatever. You are thinking about and have an open mind. Now, you will have to come to the stage where after a while you'll recognize that you can take out that segment that programs you for certain aspects and there won't be nothing happening. That was a long time. I've been doing it since I was 5 years old, maybe even 3. You can take it out where you don't do anything. So what are you doing? I'm doing nothing. I'm just sitting here. I'm experiencing. I'm doing nothing. And you plug in another segment, and then you'll start moving. That's when you know all the lessons of DE, and you practice like Larry Bird. I didn't get to mention that a while ago. Some of you may not realize this. Larry Bird's mother has publicly said this over the years, that ever since she can remember, when Larry was 7 or 8 years old, he only loved basketball. And that it was common for him every day after he got into junior high programs, every day that he had the opportunity and every holiday and off day, he would practice by himself alone on a gym or on the hard court out in the park, 8 to 10 hours per day by himself. You better write that down. I am going to practice on my technical human capabilities of love, friendship, dedication, discipline, perseverance, courage, character, friendship, honesty. I'm going to work on all these human traits 8 to 10 hours a day until I master every phase of my professional life, until I become completely automatic. How many of you know how to drive a clutch-driven car? You know how it is, how bad it is, until you learn how to shift the gears and work the handle? Then do you think about it? After you've got this technique mastered, or even riding a bicycle. You ever tried to ride? I don't remember how I didn't used to do it. I can ride one. How when you're trying to balance it won't work? Or you're trying to drive a car and run the gear and you don't know how? You can't make your feet go with your hands and you can't shift the gears. You go jerking and popping and bumping and jerking and popping and bumping up the road. That's reduced to a habit. That habit controls your driving activities. Now, what I'm saying, most people who don't have the ability to reach a lot of people in chiropractic have got bad habits that control their life and their success and their business. They do it mentally, emotionally, in your imagination, and then the action. Habits control that. Some of you didn't write that down, but you should. Habits control you. You must change habits. I'm not talking about metaphysically or esoterically. I'm talking about physically changing habits. Changing habits.
For a continuation of this exciting and informative talk by Dr. Sid E. Williams, you may now stop the cassette and turn it to side 2.